Welcome to another sparkling edition of On The Record, the Two Mics podcast series, which has been now going for quite some time.
Certainly has.
With some good level of success. Numbers. Back in the charts again as well, by the way.
I smack my fist together there to emphasise.
We're riding high in the comedy charts as well in iTunes, which is always good.
Riding high what, sorry?
In the comedy charts.
Really?
Podcast comedy charts,
but I'm, of course, a serious broadcaster.
Of course you're a serious broadcaster.
I don't believe in the comedy charts per se.
No, but you know, some people find it funny.
Oh yeah,
even if you don't mean it to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that's why, of course, because you are a serious broadcaster and taken seriously as a commentator.
Yes.
We also do once a month an Ask Porky, and it's that time of the month
to
get Ask Porky down. Yeah. And what basically happens is you send us all your questions on Facebook, on Twitter, a variety of other ways as well.
Yes.
I put them to Porky. He gives you an answer. It goes out live on the podcast.
I understand you've had hundreds of questions.
Had a lot, yeah, had an awful lot. Brilliant. We're going to start with Facebook with Chris, who sent this. First of all, I don't want you to think this is too highbrow.
No, no.
Does BBC stand for Biased Broadcasting Corporation?
Well, let me tell you this. The BBC, of course, was formed... was it formed post-war? Pre-war? Lord Reith was the first... He didn't actually found it. He was appointed the first administrator of it. Founded by the government, of course, and put together. Mm. And it was pre-war, wasn't it?
It was.
Pre-Second War.
Pre-Second World War, yeah.
Because I think even in 1932, if my memory serves me, there was a partial commentary on an Arsenal game.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
By who?
On radio. Yeah, definitely.
Was that John Motson?
No. yeah, I think it was John's first game.
No,
yeah,
no. Yeah, yeah. That would be unfair.
So that's a bit harsh.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, I'm sure you know this, so I'm not telling my grandmother how to suck eggs, because I wouldn't mind. But you know, of course, where the expression back to square one comes from.
I don't actually know.
Well, back to square one is when the BBC, and it must have been pre-war, because my dad told me this, and he, of course, was 17 when he joined the Royal Navy in 1940.
Yes.
So he grew up during the 30s. Mm. Well, he was born in
1923.
He was born in 1924, actually.
Okay.
Because
same year as my mother.
Same year as your mother, but he was 17 when he went into the Royal Navy. A remarkably young age when you think about it. But anyway, so on the Saturday afternoon when the FA Cup final was on, and remember, Everton played Manchester City in 1933.
Right.
His father went to
You say all this as if I should know it. I don't know any of this.
Well, his father went to the FA Cup final with Dixie Dean, because Dixie Dean was his best mate.
Right.
And they were found lying face down on the floor outside the Rock pub the following morning, Sunday, in Rock Ferry.
Right.
England centre forward and the man who'd won the FA Cup for Everton, and my dad, who was sent out to bring them home for Sunday lunch, you know. Mm. But anyway, the point of my story is, my dad would have listened to it with his ear to the steam radio.
Oh, yeah.
Because in those days, you had a lot of...
Yeah.
A lot of crackle and all that. And then a voice would suddenly come out of this...
giant radio,
this giant box, But what happened was, when they when the commentator was commentating on the game, instead of having a co-commentator, you had a man in the background, because what, you know, the Radio Times, the publishing document, the publishing magazine, biggest selling magazine in the world for a lot of years, you know, the Radio Times. Mm. And on the week of the cup final, you got a gatefold pullout in the middle, which was a map of the of a football pitch, and it was divided into nine squares.
Right. Nine
squares.
That's a very unusual number.
Well, it was three across and three down. Do you see what I mean? On the playing surface.
Right.
And the commentator...
Well, why nine, though?
Well, I'll just tell you. And the commentator was giving the commentary and saying... and in the background, every 15 seconds, a voice said, square seven. Square nine.
What, as to where the ball was?
Yeah, exactly, because you were looking at your map. Square four.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and then the ultimate one, if the goalie got it, was back to square one.
Really?
Yeah, that's where it came from.
I had no idea of that.
Yeah, that's
never
where
heard of that.
That's where it came from. So anyway...
Anyway, we haven't really answered the question,
right, what's the question again?
The question is, does BBC stand for Biased Broadcasting Corporation?
Well, you know, I think you have to look at the ins and outs of this. Some would say it was biased, some would say... Actually, funny enough, both sides in the Brexit debate have accused the BBC of being biased to the other side, haven't they?
Well, I mean, that's when you know you're doing it right.
And that's what always happens with these sort of things. I mean, look, you might think that I'm sort of going easy here because I earn a living sometimes.
Well,
from
you
appearing
certainly do,
on
yeah.
BBC
I do think that,
shows.
Actually, yeah, funny
yeah.
enough.
Well, I think that's disgraceful, because now you're accusing me of being...
I'm just accusing you of being, shall we say, not yeah. biting the hand that feeds you.
I am totally impartial. Yeah. I believe that when I go on the BBC, if they are biased,
yeah.
I don't half rock their
Is
boat.
Is that right? Okay.
Okay?
All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Very good. How
yeah.
about this from Pablo? Porky, I'm 45 and I've been in the same job for the last 21 years.
Yeah.
It's not a bad job and the money is okay. Mm. But I'm ready for a new challenge now. Should I tell my boss to stick it yeah. or keep collecting my paychecks and plod along as I am?
Well, that's a mad question, because there's a number of things I have to address there. Firstly, what is your job?
Yeah.
Is it the sort of job
Well, he
that,
says it's an okay job. So, it, I mean, call yeah, it maybe yeah. a sort of middle management
well,
job.
Are you
I don't
an
know.
Insurance salesman? Are you a railway worker? Mm. Do you, I don't know, clean the bogs at an airport or something like that?
I would imagine. Well, I don't know.
We don't know. But anyway, what I was going to say to you is this. You have to consider a number of options here. Firstly, if you leave your current job, which you say is an okay job and the yeah. money's all right, what are you going to do next?
Yeah.
Are you qualified to do anything else? Probably not. Do you have dependents who depend on your salary and therefore you have obligations to get a regular income? Have you just reached some sort of midlife... How long has he been in the job?
Well, I think he said 21 years.
21 years. Maybe you've reached some sort of midlife crisis. Maybe you started there as boy and man, 17 or 18, and you're now getting up to 40 or something like that. All I would say to you is this, that you should always try and get satisfaction out of a job, fulfilment out of a job. You do a job that's not satisfying you or fulfilling you, I can't get up in the morning and go to that job. And in the past, I've had to actually hold my hands up and say to people, I can't do this anymore. The circumstances are wrong. My creative genius is not allowed to flourish in those circumstances, and I'm off.
Okay. Is that it?
Well, what I'm saying to you is...
So you tell him to stay in his job, basically.
I'm basically saying you don't sound to me like you're a genius, a creative genius. And if you've got a job which is paying you and all that, I would be very, very careful about chucking in your current job before you've decided you've got another one that's going to pay you more money. Anybody who leaves a job and goes to another job that's not paying more money is mad.
All right. John says, would Porky agree that honesty is always the best policy, or is it okay to tell a lie for the right reasons?
That's a very complicated question. I think you can tell a white lie or be, that you know, that old cliche, economical with the truth, if you are doing it to stop somebody being hurt, if you're doing it to try and improve a situation, if there's a misunderstanding, or if you are simply trying to be nice, okay? There's not a problem there. Where fibbing does not... work and should not be tolerated is if you do it A, to harm people, B, to improve yourself at the expense of somebody else, C, to mislead somebody for pernicious reasons, or D, to try and profit from it by literally getting the facts wrong and illustrating them wrongly. Lying is a terrible thing if it's done in an evil manner.
Yeah,
but I can appreciate the necessity for white lies. Sometimes children have to be told white lies. For instance, if they're parents are not well or something like that, you have to be kind and considerate and generous to children, and that includes white lies.
So what if you were saying, if your wife said to you, does my bum look big in this, and it does, what are you supposed to do?
I would, I because I'm smart.
Or in your case, somebody else's wife.
Yes, exactly. I'm smart than average bear, and I'd say that's you know, highly attractive. By the way, have you seen the size of Carol Vorderman's posterior recently?
Well,
there's been
I saw
a big
that there was,
debate about it.
Well, I saw that there was a big picture of her on the front page of a national newspaper recently.
Yes.
In which she was revealing all about her curves.
Yes, she was.
I mean, she's always been quite curvy, I would say.
Well, you see pictures of her years ago, and she wasn't particularly curvaceous, to be honest, particularly around her bosomy area.
Well, I used to see her quite a bit.
But she says it's down to HRT.
Yeah.
She says it's down to exercise. Yeah. It's down to the vitamins
she
takes.
Well, I used to see her quite a lot in the Mirror during the time when Pride of Britain was on when I was working there. And she was always that sort of shape, to be honest, you know, and not small.
Oh, I think she's a very attractive woman.
She's a great woman.
Yeah.
She's very vivacious.
Yeah.
Let's see what we've got here. Mike has sent this in on Facebook. Why is your Twitter handle MikeParry8?
Because the number 8 is a tribute to Alan Ball.
Is it?
Now, I didn't do Twitter for years. When we worked together, Mike, on the...
Well, when we started on Talk Sport in like 2010, Twitter was only really just becoming a thing.
Well, I didn't
it?
Want to be on it, if you remember, and you would say, you know, send these into Twitter. There was a Twitter handle for the show. No, I didn't understand.
It was very much at its infancy.
It's only the next year or two I sort of realised the power of Twitter.
Mm.
And I'm not sure these days whether Twitter is that powerful anymore, because there's so many other social networks these days.
Yeah, I think it's kind of plateaued. Twitter, but there's still a lot of people that use it.
Yeah, well,
it's a good way to reach people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I still enjoy it because it's a great way to communicate. And the answer to the question is that, of course, naively, you think when you start, at Mike Parry. Well, unfortunately, there are other Mike Parrys in the world,
there
believe
are.
It or not.
Incredibly.
Yeah, so Mike Parry 8 was, the 8 was Alan Ball's number at Everton, my revered hero of the great Everton team of the 1970s, i.e. we won the league championship in 1970. So I made it at Mike Parry 8.
Something here from Michael, who says, if Porky was to be Prime Minister, who from TalkSport or Talk Radio would he have in his government cabinet to back him? Surely MG would be the Brexit negotiator. God, help save me.
Well, I can tell you this. I would certainly have MG in my cabinet and probably make him Chancellor or something like that. You know,
I'm not very good with money, though.
No, you're hopeless with money, actually. That's a good point. But then so is every Chancellor who's ever taken
the
job.
Exactly,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, you know,
I'm probably better than George Osborne,
absolutely. You know, Gordon Brown, you know, who managed to sell £12 billion worth of gold for $1 billion.
Fiver.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. George Osborne, who managed to completely fuck up the buy-to-let property
George
market.
Brown Chancellor as well, the old pisshead in Harold Wilson's cabinet?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was he Chancellor?
No, he was Foreign Secretary.
Ah, okay.
He was Foreign Secretary. Dennis Healey was the Chancellor
right,
in those
yeah.
days. Yeah, he was Foreign Secretary. But George Osborne, useless, decided, I'm going to bring more money in on the stamp duty. So I raised stamp duty on properties over $1 million to 13%.
Mm.
What happened? The stamp duty take on properties over $1 million has gone down $1 billion.
Right.
Another brilliant masterstroke by George Osborne.
Genius.
So I'd probably make you Chancellor for that reason. But just to get you into the cabinet,
yeah.
as my cabinet bruiser, you
yes,
see what I mean?
Absolutely.
Say a few harsh words.
Yes.
Other people from Talks, well, I think I'd have Mark Saggers in the
he's
cabinet.
He's very, very wise.
Saggers
isn't
would
he?
Get in there and start laying into people. I think for a bit of charm, Paul Hawksby.
Yes.
Paul can charm people and all that kind of stuff. I think we'd have to have Laura Woods in.
Yes.
You know, she's you know, a brilliant mind and can weave through an argument brilliantly. No
problem
there. How
about putting in Alan Brazil as health secretary?
Brazil's health secretary as a... Because Al is
a medical miracle.
I mean, he's a medical miracle. And what we could do is we could half the amount of money we spend on the National Health Service by saying, bollocks to you lot, you don't need treating.
Yeah.
This man's never had any treatment.
Yeah,
drinks
right.
three bottles of champagne a day.
Just go
he's
to the
fine.
Just go down the pub.
You lot are all conning us. You're not getting any treatment. It would be that sort of government.
Yeah, okay. Jeffrey says, dear Porky, I'm suffering from insomnia. Mm. What is the best thing to do to get me to sleep?
Well, if I were you, I'd like turn on James O'Brien on LBC, you know what I mean? And
that's always a good one.
Yeah, and that would get you to sleep very quickly indeed. You know, we all know James O'Brien is, or perhaps some people don't because he's not very important.
No,
but no, on,
it certainly is boring though.
Insomnia can be a really terrible problem, and I mean this sincerely, folks, because I've suffered from it often.
Mm.
And it, without a shadow of a doubt, I always thought that when you go to bed, put your head on the pillow, all your cares drift away. Mine don't. Mine stay in my head, and they go round and round and round. Sometimes I have to get up and open my laptop and start emailing things. I know people aren't going to receive them. Time of night, but I can't then go back to bed unless I've addressed the problem.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And then at least that's a weight off your mind.
It's a weight off your mind. But insomnia is very, very what's the word I'm looking for? Debilitating
it
is exactly the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
And who's the ITN newsreader lad who took 3 months off work?
Oh, yes, the former Royal guy.
Yeah, that's
it?
Right.
Tom
yeah.
somebody, is it?
Tom Bradby. Brady or
Bradby. I think it's
Bradby. Yeah. Tom Bradby. Who, by the way, apparently is very good looking, and during his career,
what do you mean, apparently.
Well, I don't know if a man's good looking or not because I'm heterosexual.
You must. Funny enough, we were talking at the weekend about you know that guy who's married or with or shacked up with what's her name? Green's daughter, Chloe Green.
Oh yeah, the
guy who's the
criminal, the
thug. Like the bank robber,
yeah.
who's now become a model because he's so handsome, but he's a criminal. Right, and all
he
these
is,
women
yeah.
are going, oh, look at how handsome he is. And you can see that he's handsome.
He's gangster chic, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Is that what
yeah.
they call him?
Yeah, they call him something felon, don't they?
That's right, felon chic or gangster chic. Or some load of bollocks like that. Yeah, but that's right. A
fashion felon.
But anyway, what was the question again?
Insomnia, what did he do?
Yeah, insomnia. So he took 3 months off and went and got treatment for it. There is one thing that apparently works. I've never tried it, but they give it you in hotels. It's a little sachet of sort of... like perfumed water or something like that, which you put on your pillow.
Oh, yes.
And
I've heard of that.
And the vapors sort of supposed to get you. So, but
you can also get one of those like white noise machines that they say is quite good.
Really?
And it emits a kind of an almost imperceptible sound.
Really?
But somehow it relaxes you.
Yeah.
And it's also very good for cancelling out any other noise, apparently, yeah, if there's other noise that you can hear.
One thing I can tell you is not good for insomnia is bladderation.
Bladderation is not.
Because
you end up having a sleepless night.
Oh, you end up having 3 hours sleep and nothing else. You know, you get in at 10 hours, put my head down. By 2:30, you're awake.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then that then impinges on your ability the next day to get up and go.
Yeah.
It really does.
It does.
So I would say I can't tell you the answer to insomnia, but what I have to do to try and avoid insomnia is clear the day's events.
Yes.
You know, when you and I finished here, you might go and have a quick drink or something like that. On the train on the way home, I'll be picking up the emails and the messages that we haven't taken.
Well, if there are any trains on the way home, there was some bad train trouble, not only for you today, but the other day, coming into Waterloo, all the trains were cancelled.
Cancelled. Unbelievable. Honestly, I don't know who runs the trains in this country, but they should be shot.
I know.
And then when I get home, I mean, you can have long, energising days. And sometimes you get home at 7 o'clock and you say, I'm too knackered to do anything. But I can't do that. I have to then address everything and then I can go to bed and sleep. So insomnia can sometimes be a state of mind that all is not well with your life.
Okay. Alan says this. Hi, Porky. I'm 44, getting married in August for the first time. Should I be railroaded into having a stag night or insist on just a few beers with close friends? P.S. If you two would like to attend the wedding in Glasgow, you're more than welcome.
Well, that's very kind of you, but we don't go to Glasgow these days unless somebody offers us a lift on their executive jet. And... it's a reference, of course, to
Rod Stewart.
Glasgow with Sir Rod Stewart. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, he gets around a bit, doesn't he?
He does,
you know,
doesn't
he's
he?
Always in the news because he's active and lively. The Cheltenham, yeah.
Yes, the Cheltenham.
Well, he was supposed to meet Al at Cheltenham, Mr. Brazil, but I don't know if they got together.
No,
I didn't see pictures of it. But having said that, Cheltenham is so huge and it is so packed to get from one side.
Do you remember the last time you and I went?
Yeah.
And it turned out that the TalkSport broadcasting booth in the box for Paddy Power was miles away from where we thought it was.
Exactly.
Because they'd moved it to not the winning post, but further down.
That's right.
And that whole area.
It took us 20 minutes to get there.
But that whole area is massive.
The whole thing is massive. And. And all I can say is that why are we talking about Cheltenham again?
About
stag night.
About the stag night in Glasgow.
Now you know my view on stag nights. Stag nights, to my mind, are totally unnecessary.
Yeah,
they were necessary in the '50s, right, when we were coming out of the war, and you would save up for 3 months to say you're going to have a stag night. You'd go out with a few mates, and remarkably, they used to have them the night before their wedding.
Also, then the idea was that you were basically being taken off the market.
Yes.
Because you were now married.
That's right.
Whereas that's not true anymore.
No, of course it's not true.
You get married and you can be back on the market, you know, next week.
Well, some people never come off the market.
No, well, that's
you
true.
Will know about that yourself.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And I won't delve into that.
Not to put too fine a point.
Yeah.
Though.
But what I'm saying is that we now live in such a wealthy society that most people of middle class or lower middle class, upper middle class, can go out and have a night out with the lads anytime they like.
Yes.
And I don't see any need to make an occasion of it anymore.
Mm.
Now, I personally don't like gatherings in big numbers.
No.
I'm not sure you do.
I don't either, no.
I'd much prefer to go out with you, a couple of colleagues from work, Steve and Danny or something like that.
So a small gathering for him would
be best. Small gathering, but I still think it's an insult to the person you're marrying to say, oh, you know, I'm going to be in jail for the rest of my life, so I'm going to have one last night of freedom. Mm. And the other thing is, at 44, you shouldn't do it the night before your wedding.
No.
At 44, it takes a lot longer to recover the following
morning.
Well,
I did mine 2 nights before the wedding.
Yeah, well, I would do mine a week before, like Prince Charles did and all that. But I wouldn't have a stag night in the first place. I would literally say to your best man, come on, we're going out, pick your best one or two friends and go and have dinner.
Yeah.
But don't go into a pub because it gets leery and you start getting silly and making sexist jokes and all that.
That's
bollocks,
not good.
And you don't need all that.
No.
Yeah.
Final question before the break. John says, dear Porky, which person have you most enjoyed firing in your career?
Well, I've never enjoyed firing anybody because I'm not of that order.
Are you sure?
However... The strangest thing is, right, and I have had to fire a lot of people, and sometimes people in sort of senior management positions will have somebody above them who tells them to fire people, right? Now, weak and useless people just say, oh, okay. I have saved more jobs than I have sacked.
Well, by refusing to fire
people. Refusing to fire and say, no, that guy's okay. I'm sticking with him, you know, no problem at all. And often made myself very unpopular in doing that, but I'm not going to be a doormat for some bullying autocratic boss who says, you know, yeah, fuck him off. Yeah, he's no fucking good. Right. I don't know, fuck, we employ him and fuck this and fuck that. You know, I say, well, I'm not doing it. I fucking told you. Yeah, and they'll just turn around and walk away sometimes. Yeah. And you know, they will save their revenge for a later date or something like that, you know. However, believe it or not, on one occasion, somebody had employed a man who used to be a famous actor on EastEnders. And he came to work at TalkSport. I rated him as not appropriate for TalkSport. It was, you know, TalkSport, you know. TalkSport.
It was Dirty
station.
Den, was it?
No, it wasn't Dirty Den, no. And it was so cockney and so sort of throwaway and all that. Yeah, I love my football, TalkSport here, you know, all that. And I thought it sounded horrible and I didn't want it. So I rang this guy up, right? And he was in his car, you know, and I said, oh, hello. Yeah, well, yeah, great show again, mate. You know, I loved it. You know, their fucking audience love it.
You
didn't
fire him on the phone, did you?
I did, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I said, look, I'm not sure it's working like something. And he said, well, my reaction to that, mate, is you have made the biggest fucking mistake of your life.
Oh, yeah.
I said, well, you know, I'll have to live with that, really. Yeah, you watch it now. I'm telling you, that station there, it's doomed, doomed, you know. And went off the phone. And I don't think he ever did any, like, you know.
He's never been back to the business since.
Well, I'm not aware of him having done any regular work in broadcasting since.
Indeed.
But that's not to say, I mean, look, he was a great actor once. And apparently chose to walk away and go and do other things. I didn't think he made it for us, so I took no joy in it. I've never taken any joy in sacking anybody, but a lot of people, funny enough, have taken joy in sacking me.
Well, indeed, I think I might say the same. I once fired I had to fire somebody off a radio show in Scotland, and I took them, two of them, to a bar. We were keeping one of them on and firing the other one. So in my wisdom, I decided to take them both to the same bar, right, and sit there, and got them a drink, and we sat down, and I said, well, we're going to talk about the show. And the woman who I was firing said, well, at least you're not firing us, otherwise you wouldn't have brought us for a drink. And I went, well, actually, it's not quite like that. And it went from bad to
and
worse.
Did you fire both of them?
Just one of them.
What did you take the other one with?
Well, I had to, because I wanted to explain to both of them, so they were quite close. I didn't want to split them up. I wanted to say to them, look, the fact is, basically, we're running out of money.
Right.
And so we can't employ both of you any longer. Okay. Now, I can offer you a scenario whereby you both stay on. But you'll both have to take less money.
Yeah, sure.
Or I can go with one and the other one goes.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. And again, you were forced into that. The only joy I really took in finding somebody was I took on a bloke once as my deputy. But I didn't need a deputy because I was so dominant in the way I was running things, like you would have been.
Yeah, yeah.
You're really a deputy, but, you know, the boss said, well, you have somebody to take the weight off your shoulders, you know. So this guy came in, recommended, you know, from Scotland.
That's always a bad idea, because usually that means they're a fucking spy.
That's right, recommended from Scotland. And he fired himself, really, because I wanted him in there on Saturday afternoon when we were launching a couple of new presenters, you know, doing things like Round the Grounds and all that. And he sent in some ridiculous, you know, reason why he couldn't be there, and, you know, he'd be working 7 days a week and all that kind of stuff. And then I found out Monday morning he'd actually gone and moonlighted and was doing radio broadcasts for LBC from the grounds.
Really?
Yeah.
What a plonker.
So I had great joy in saying, what's this? You know, because some, you know,
that's
I got
ridiculous.
The recording.
What do you think you weren't going to find out?
Yeah, exactly.
What
I said,
an idiot.
Oh, he said, well, I've every right to do that. I've told you in my note, I work 7 days a week, I want a few hours off on a Saturday, and do what I want to my own time. He said, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah, really.
And just booted him out,
Right. Well, we've got loads more questions here.
Okay.
And this one is a bit of a local one for you from Richard on Twitter.
Right.
Who says this, Porky, my new job will take me to Chester now and then.
Oh, yeah.
Have you got any top tips for a night out? And are Chester races any good?
Well, Chester races are brilliant. Expensive because it's a chic meeting and everything in Chester is quite expensive these days. You know, last time I was there, which was just before Christmas, Chester is an expensive city. Once again, you haven't quite explained what you mean by get together, you're going with lads or...
Well, he says he's going to go to Chester now and again, so I presume that means he's going to spend the odd night there.
Yeah, well, I suppose so. Well, look, the hotel to stay in is the Grosvenor, but it's expensive, they're expensive. But there are lots of other good hotels in Chester now. And if you go to sort of, the outer city centre, you know, like there's a travel inn and sorry, a travel lodge and a premier inn and all that kind of stuff, which are perfectly fine if you're a working man and going there, no problem at all. But you can't help but have a great night in Chester. Chester Cross has four streets that go off it: Northgate Street, Lower Bridge Street, Northgate Street, Bridge Street, Watergate Street, and Eastgate Street. Mm. And from the cross, walk down any one, and there are half a dozen pubs and three or four restaurants.
Yeah.
So it's no good me recommending something to you. When you get there, you'll see it. And believe me, you won't have enough time to enjoy the wonders of Chester, the Rose, and the Roman walls.
Okay. This one's a bit more newsy.
Right.
Vino says, after seeing the footage of the Viking Sky the other week, what's Porky's opinion on cruises? This is that terrible cruise liner up in Norway.
They had
to helicopter people
That's
off.
That's right.
Well, I mean, that would be my worst nightmare, going on a cruise ship that crashes.
Yeah, but if you saw the ferocity of the seas in which they were trapped, they were trapped, funny enough, just off Molde, which, of course, is where Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's team is based. Yeah. Okay, just right off the coast.
Hang on, these
there.
Ships are supposed to be able to withstand a storm, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, but the problem was the engines broke down. Mm. Now, if your engines break down on a massive ship, you're then being tossed around by the waves. What a captain does in a storm is he never... sails side on to waves.
Yeah.
You sail into waves.
Right.
You have to,
and they
break over the front of the ship. Otherwise, it'll tip you over.
Although it can be so bad
if
you're in a big storm, even when you're going forward against them.
Yes,
my parents went on the Curie 2 once.
Yes.
And they were getting like 40-foot swells.
Right.
And the ship was going up and down. And I mean, that's a big ship to be going up and down.
It sure is.
You know, frightening.
My old fellow was in the Navy during the Second World War. Crossing the Bay of Biscay, which he said was the worst
that
ever saw. 40-foot waves would crash over the bow of the ship and smash the windows on the, in the, place where they steer
the ship?
The bridge, smash the windows in the bridge and all this kind of stuff. You know, it was that ferocious. So, what was the question?
The question is, having seen the footage of Viking Sky, what's your opinion on cruises?
Well, I don't like cruises anyway, and I've said this before. I can't believe the size of cruise ships these days. They're so huge.
I don't know
how they stay in the water.
I know. They look like they would tip over.
They look like they'd tip over, but they've got like over 1,200 members of staff alone, but 5,000 passengers. Mm. Now, I mean, blimey, you know, there are some villages or small towns in this country who've got 5,000 people.
If I was on a boat like that, I'd get lost.
You won't these days, because you know what? They issue an app.
Yeah.
And on your phone will guide you around the boat.
Oh, really?
That's how advanced they all are.
Is that right?
And your children are given wristbands.
Right.
So you can find them on your app, you know, which part of the
ship. Because I used to go on a little smaller version, quite a big ferry, though, like Brittany Ferries, down to St. Malo or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's an oven that's got cabins and stuff like that. And that was quite a big, I mean, nothing compared to these things, but I used to get lost on that.
Yeah, well, some of them have like 13 or 14 decks. And they have a bar on every deck.
Yeah.
So you and I'd be quite happy, you know, doing
Well, that's one of the reasons I get lost.
Yeah, well,
because
exactly.
Because I wouldn't be far away back from the bladderation station. Exactly.
But the worst thing is, no matter how big is the ship, if there are people on that ship that you're trying to get away from, you never do. Eventually, you bump into them.
Because you have to eat in the same place every night.
You have to eat in the same restaurant every night. If you don't like the people you're eating with, you've
had it. Yeah, I'd hate that.
I would hate that. And also, although there are plenty of facilities on these ships, some of them have even got like mountain climbing walls and a load of bollocks.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them have got, you know, these zip wires. You can zip down from one end
of
the ship to the other.
Places you can hit a golf ball.
Hit a golf ball and all that.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, to me, it'd still be like being in prison. Mm. If you felt bollocks to this, I want to get out of here.
Yeah.
You can't unless you jump ship at the next port.
Or it's one of those that goes to a lot of different ports quite quickly.
Well, yeah, but even then, you've got to get back on with all the same people.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, you know, supposing you start at Southampton and you do the Caribbean and you do 13 islands, you still then got the trip back 4 days across the Atlantic to Southampton.
Fancy. Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of our former colleagues have done that trip where you get a free trip, basically, and you give lectures.
That's right.
I knew a couple of people. Bill Haggerty did it.
Oh, yeah.
He used to go on the Curie 2. You get a free passage on the Curie 2.
Yes.
But every night, or twice or three times during the voyage, he would give a little
hour-long
lecture about the press or something
like that. That's right, yeah.
I wouldn't fancy that either, really.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd mind a free holiday now and then, a facility trip.
A facility trip.
But you can be a bit picky about them these days.
Mm. Yeah. Now, this one's a bit more serious. Nick says, Porky, with the recent Madeleine McCann documentary being released, what are your thoughts, firstly, on what happened on that fateful night, and secondly, how the press treated the family and other members of the public?
Yeah, it's a really interesting subject because...
I've not seen this new documentary, which is on Netflix. I don't know whether you have.
I haven't. And what I found very odd was that the parents wouldn't take part.
No.
And I thought, hang on, you've said over the years, all publicity is good publicity. It's over 10 years now, isn't it?
Mm.
10 years. I think that was the 10th year
anniversary. I think she would be now 15, Maddie, because she was 5, wasn't she?
No, I think she was... The twins were... I think she was... Was she 3 or 6?
I thought I saw a piece in the paper the other day saying that she would have been now 15.
Okay,
I'm
sure you're right, yeah. But anyway, the point of the story is, years ago when it first happened, I thought it was some brutal, you know, local peasant in Portugal who kidnapped Maddie. And but the more I think about it, and the more time goes on...
2007 she disappeared.
2007,
yeah,
so 12
years ago.
And how old was she?
So maybe she was 3.
Yeah, she was 3. Yeah. She was 3, that's right, yeah. She was 3 when she went. And... you know, you've always said, and I always thought it was a bit cruel, but you've always said that you can't understand why there's not a single clue to her disappearance. And that the last people who saw her and the people who raised the alarm and the people who, you know, have always been at the centre of it are the parents. And your theory that they gave their children what used to be called the liquid cosh, that's Calpon, isn't it, to make the children go to sleep, that they might have overdosed her on it. And, you know, this is a popular theory.
Well, it's not my theory. It is a theory.
A theory,
I mean,
yeah.
They're very litigious people as well. I mean, anybody says anything about what they might have been involved in, they immediately sue them.
I know they are, but they can't sue us for discussing it because it is a theory that's been put forward.
That's true. Right? But I'm not saying that that's what I think they did.
Of course you're not saying it. You've drawn my attention to that theory, right? And I don't believe that, to start off with. I can't believe how two doctors could possibly... And how could you live with it ever since? My favourite version of events... is that Maddie got up in the middle of the night, she's 3 years of age, looking for her mum.
Yeah.
Because there is a very strange report that there might have been somebody in the apartment the night before.
Right.
Because the morning on which she disappeared, when her mum came into her bedroom, she hugged her and said, "Oh, mummy, why didn't you come to me when I cried last night?" And you know, Dr. McCann, the mother, they're both doctors, said, "What were you crying for? You know, I was very frightened, mummy. I was frightened." But she never actually said there was a man in it. She said, "I was very frightened last night." And Mrs. McCann, I can't remember her name now, has never quite explained that. But my theory, my best theory, is that Maddie got out of bed looking for her mum and dad.
Found Kate.
Kate McCann, that's right.
Kate and Jerry.
And discovered the door was open, right?
Yeah.
So she went outside. I don't think anybody went into their apartment. I think she went outside. I think she could have wandered to a road and been knocked down by a car. Mm. And that the person who knocked her down may have been drunk or on drugs or a local peasant who'd stolen a car or anything, put her in the boot, drove another 10 or 15 miles and then literally threw her body into a gully or something like that. I think that's the most likely outcome because otherwise... there's never been a connection about where she was taken.
The only thing about the missing situation is that there are an incredible number of kids that get abducted every year.
Yeah.
We don't tend to hear about them very much because they don't tend to be kids that are noticeably, you know, missing, if you know what I mean. You know, they tend to be kids who might be, you know, abandoned, living in sort of strange circumstances, living in caravan parks, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And so when they go missing, there isn't anything like the kind of, you know, intense search that has been going on for Madeleine McCann ever since.
Well, it's because...
And it might well be that there are people who abduct children that we just don't understand. And in this particular case, unusually, because they thought they could get away with it, they did.
Well, maybe. I just don't get why there's never been a clue.
Yeah.
Not a single blinking clue. And it's all very well to say, well, the Portuguese police blundered around, there was no DNA and all that. But there must have been footmarks, you know, and footprints. And
well, the police case was not put together well, was it?
It wasn't put together well, but nevertheless, you know, we send English detectives over there. And you know what it's like when you reopen a case, even months later, you go back on all the clues and you find something that somebody's missed.
Mm.
And there's been intensive re-examination of this case time and time again. Top British detectives, private investigators. Nobody's ever found a clue about what led to her disappearance.
Mm.
It is one of the great mysteries of all time.
Football question next. Jimmy says, is Jordan Pickford the weakest link in the England team and should he be replaced by Heaton?
Well, I don't think Pickford should be replaced. The problem is, right, the problem we've got is between now and the next tournament, which is next summer.
Well, it's next summer, isn't it? Yeah.
which is the DAF tournament. What's it called? The
The Euros.
Oh, it's the Euros. Yeah, well, yeah. The one this summer, sorry, is the DAF tournament, isn't it?
This summer.
Yeah, it's the new silly nationwide tournament to replace friendlies.
Oh, is it?
You know,
the Europe League. Or
yeah, Europa League or something like. You know, we qualified just before Christmas.
Yes.
You know, with another great
waste of time.
Complete waste of time. But
has that got a final situation then going?
Oh, yeah, it's got a final situation.
Where's that playing? Being played
in Portugal, I think.
Is it?
Yeah, because the final we're talking about is going to be played at Wembley.
Right.
This summer. Right, 2020, right. Summer 2020. Now, the point is that the games Jordan Pickford plays between now and then, there's eight qualifiers altogether. We've played two. We played Montenegro most recently, and before that, Czechoslovakia. What's Czechoslovakia?
The Czech Republic.
Czech Republic, that's right. Yeah. So two out of the way and six to go. And he won't be tested. He wasn't tested in the two games I've just mentioned, and he won't be tested again. So it's difficult to say how he's going to cope in the climatic atmosphere finals. The only thing we can say is, in the climatic atmosphere of the last finals he played in, which was the World Cup in Francais,
yes,
he did very well.
Now, this one, we're nearly coming to an end here. We've got loads more questions than we can actually get to, unfortunately. Okay. DJ Lou says this. Yeah. Porky, what is your least favourite county in the UK and why?
Well, that's not a bad question. I've got lots of favourite counties. I love Northumberland. And obviously Cumberland, which is the Lake District, is beautiful. Yorkshire's beautiful. Lancashire is beautiful. And if you go further south down the country, Cornwall and Devon are beautiful. Somerset's beautiful. We've got loads and loads of beautiful counties. Some of the counties in Wales, north and south, are beautiful. I mean, Midlands gets a bad reputation because it's called the Black Country. Yeah, right. Dudley, the Black Country.
A bit of a conurbation, isn't it?
But Warwickshire and Worcestershire are beautiful counties as well. The counties over in East Anglia, I've got property in Suffolk.
Right. What about Norfolk?
Norfolk.
You say nobody goes there.
Nobody goes there. I've been there once. I went and stayed at the Crown at Westleton because I was camped out trying to spot David Frost with his new girlfriend, who happened to be Peter Sellers' former wife.
Yeah. Well,
but
Britt
Sellers
Eklund.
Had died. No, not Britt Eklund. It wasn't Britt Eklund. Britt Eklund was married to Peter Sellers, but then they got divorced. And Peter Sellers was married to another lady.
I think I know who you mean.
Yeah, and I can't remember her name now. And
is she the one who was the mother of Victoria?
Yes,
Sellers?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, the daughter.
Was, and then Peter Sellers died, and then David Frost took up with this lady, who he's not married to anymore. He's married to a countess or something, isn't he?
He's dead.
In fact, not only is David Frost dead, one of his sons is dead as well,
that's
unfortunately,
right.
From that
true.
Marriage, you know, which is very harsh.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Crown Inn at Westleton was beautiful. Mm. It was on a little harbour. We went out fishing at 6 in the morning after drinking whiskey all night. It was brilliant. Yeah, it was great.
Well, you've got to give me a county you don't like, though.
Well, if there's a county I don't like, I think it would be Kent.
Really?
Yeah.
The Garden of England?
Yeah, the Guardian of England. Yeah, and I love Surrey and Sussex, East and West, you know, Brighton. And where
Tunbridge Wells is pretty nice.
Well, I just don't know why I don't like Kent.
Really?
I don't like Kent. Don't like Kent because I think Folkestone is a shithole. And
Dover's not very nice either.
Dover's not much better.
Yeah.
And they are the arrival port for our country, for many, many people. And also, I don't like the fact that Edward Heath had a constituency, you know, and that, you know, that sort of nose of Kent, if you see what I mean, that comes back into the Thames estuary.
Yes.
I don't like...
That's the sort of the Rochester type area, isn't it?
Well, not even that. Worse.
The Medway towns you're talking about.
Well, Medway towns, Maidstone, don't like very much. But on the north coast of Kent, you've got places like Something Bay. Is it...
Herne Bay.
Herne Bay, and all places like
that's
that.
That's not very nice.
And I think they're ghastly. Yeah. So I have to say, unfortunately, if there's a county in the country I really don't like, because you see, I like those other rural counties like Gloucester.
Hampshire.
Where did all our
mates
live? Wiltshire.
Yeah.
Wiltshire and all that. I would say it'd have to be Kent.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's enough for Ask Porky because we're out of time. I'm
is that
afraid.
Right?
So, anybody whose questions did not get answered, we'll try and get to you next time. This is On the Record with the Two Mics.
Indeedio.
So, what if you were saying, if your wife said to you, does my bum look big in this? And it does.
Yeah.
What
are
you supposed to do?
I would, because I'm smart.
Or in your case, somebody else's wife.
Yes, exactly. I'm smart than average bear, and I'd say that's highly attractive. By the way, have you seen the size of Carol Vorderman's posterior recently. Well, it's been a big debate about it.
Well, I saw that there was a big picture of her on the front page of a national newspaper recently.
Yes.
In which she was revealing all about her curves.
Yes, she was.
I mean, she's always been quite curvy, I would say.
Well, you see pictures of her years ago, and she wasn't particularly curvaceous, to be honest, particularly around her bosomy area.
Well, I used to see her quite a bit.
But she says it's down to HRT.
Yeah.
She says it's down to exercise. Yeah. It's down to the vitamins she takes.
Well, I used to see her quite a lot in the Mirror during the time when Pride of Britain was on, when I was working there. And she was always that sort of shape, to be honest, you know. And not small.
Oh, I think she's a very attractive woman.
She's a great woman.
Yeah.
She's very vivacious.
Yeah. Well, I just don't know why I don't like Kent.
Really?
I don't like Kent. Don't like Kent because I think Folkestone is a shithole. And
Dover's not very nice either.
Dover's not much better.
Yeah.
And they are the arrival port for our country, for many, many people. And also, I don't like the fact that Edward Heath had a constituency, you know, and that, you know, that sort of nose of Kent, if you see what I mean, that comes back into the Thames estuary.
Yes.
That's the
Rochester type area, isn't it?
Well, not even that. Worse.
The Medway towns you're talking about.
Well, Medway towns, Maidstone, don't like very much. But on the north coast of Kent, you've got places like Something Bay. Is it?
Herne Bay.
Herne Bay, and places like
that's
that.
That's not very
nice. And I think they're ghastly. I've told you in my note, I work 7 days a week. If I want a few hours off on a Saturday, I can do what I want. It's my own time. He said, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah, really.
And just booted him out. Yeah.